Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. Joining us really from the front lines, or very close thereof, of the California wildfires is our good friend John Andrasik, lead singer for Five for Fighting, fiveforfighting.com. The website's behind me. Lots of great stuff over there. Check that out. I'm not going to reveal exactly where you live, John, but I can tell people that it's close. And you are being impacted in different ways by your proximity to the fire and to what may come next, because this thing isn't over yet.
You're right. Actually, the winds are raging again today, and everybody's back on pins and needles. In 2019, during the Woolsey fire, our house caught on fire. Luckily, the fire department staged in our driveway, so they put it out. But our neighbor lost his house. We were out of our house for 6 months for mediation. So I understand firsthand what so many of not just Los Angelinos, but my friends are going through. Like everybody, I have multiple friends who've lost houses. And so you're in this kind of stage of trying to console, support, literally open your doors to many folks who've lost their homes, but you're also on constant evac warning. I have all my gear packed, all my guitars, because at any minute we may have to be out of here. So yeah, it's certainly been a tough week.
Very scary, very, and tough week for lots of people. And you know, you've had friends in the area who've lost their houses in this fire now, and you've been trying to help people out. You've been also shopping. We were just talking about this, about the situation out there. People are, hoarding's not the right word to use here. People are trying to be prepared for fight or flight. And there's lots of lines out there, and supplies are running thin. And, you know, you've been fortunate to be able to get there and back and get yourself prepared. Not everybody had that opportunity. And a lot of those people have lost everything that they've ever had. And a handful of them have lost their lives as well now.
No, you're right. Again, it's certainly living in California, especially after being through the Woolsey fire, you do the basics. You get all your backyard furniture out into the garage. Anything that can burn, you get out. You gas up the car. You have the animals ready to go. You have their food. You have your clothes. But and again, the Woolsey fire was horrific. I think we lost over 1,000 homes, but nobody has seen anything like this. It's Armageddon. It's every expression you could imagine. It just breaks your heart. It infuriates you, of course. But you know, as you said, we're not out of it. The winds over the next 2.5 days won't be as quite as close as the peak last week, but they're 50, 60, 70 mile an hour winds. And of course, you worry about the arsonists running around, and you don't want to leave your house for 10 minutes because your hill could be literally on fire and you might be evacuating within 15 minutes from now. So again, everybody's on pins and needles, but you know, I think also we're supporting each other, and in these tragedies, you see the best and worst of humanity, right? So we've seen the heroism of our firefighters is unmatched. Their skill, their courage. And then you see other folks taking advantage of the situation. So it is the Wild West. And we're just trying to, you know, power through it the best we can.
You know, and I've talked to people about this because I spent half my life in the Los Angeles area. I didn't live in the area that you're in. I was closer to the coast. I don't think we were ever really impacted by the fires, but there was a couple that were reasonably close. I'm thinking like 96 down in Newport. There was a big fire down there during the Santa Anas. And I mean, November to about February, this stuff happens and it's fairly cyclical. And you never know which area is really going to be impacted by that. But this particular year is worse than I think anything anybody's seen. And this is even apart from the public policy issues. The winds here are like hurricane level winds. Right. And they've got fire tornadoes. We've seen the videos of that. This is really an exceptionally bad situation weather-wise, even for people who are used to, or not used to, I don't know, you can never get used to it, but people who understood that this is part of the cycle out in Los Angeles in some of these areas. This is exceptionally worse than usual.
It's really the perfect storm. Certainly you mentioned the hurricane level winds, but we haven't had rain in basically a month and a half. So right. We're on severe drought. Even though, you know, our hills burned down, you know, 5 years ago, that foliage has grown back almost exponentially. And then you have humidity levels in the single digits. So that's why, you know, you look out the window right now and, you know, the winds are going crazy and you're nervous because it doesn't take much for the whole, the fires move so fast. And so for the next few days, really the lack of rain has killed us, because typically by now of course, California doesn't get that much rain, but we'll have some rain. So the fire situation, we're not on red flag warnings. So, and again, this may be going on not for days, but weeks, you know, hopefully not months. So it is a reality. Santa Ana, you know, even though our friends at FEMA seem to think the Santa Ana winds are a new situation, the Steely Dan was writing about Santa Ana winds 40 years ago. So it's nothing new, which also makes you even more frustrated with the folks who are supposed to protect us, because they know that these events are going to happen. And you would think they would have the resources and the wisdom to take action to be prepared for this, which obviously we were not.
Well, this is what I know that you wanted to talk about. What I want to talk about as well is what happened? Why was the Palisades Reservoir drained? Right? Why isn't there enough water for the hydrants? Why wasn't the brush at least somewhat abated over the last few years in that area? And look, I mean, it's an expensive proposition to do that type of maintenance and to build those types of things, but they have the money, or at least they used to have the money to do that. And it wouldn't necessarily have meant that there wouldn't be fires and that there wouldn't be losses, but you wouldn't have had the massive amounts of fuel on the ground combined with the lack of water to deal with it had there been preparations. Now, so first off, am I being fair about that? Or is this just such a force majeure that there really wasn't going to be any mitigation for this particular situation?
Well, look, it certainly was an extreme event. But, you know, you look on the news and you see Canadian water bombers, you know, doing heroic work. Why don't we have any water bombers? Why don't we have a fleet of water bombers? Why do fire hydrants not work? Why has our firefighting budget been cut? So I think those things have nothing to do with nature. That is human decisions. That is, frankly, decisions that politicians in California have been making for decades. A lot of people are focused on these fires, but to me, they're just another symptom of the decision makers in California for decades. It's something that everybody's focused on because it's horrible. The images are apocalyptic, and we have loss of life and we have loss of property, probably to the scale of $100 billion. But look, you know, we've talked about this before. California has been toxic for business for 20 years. Businesses are moving. Education has collapsed. Kids cannot read at a fourth grade level. You can go down the list. Of course, crime, homelessness, drug addiction on every corner. So what we're seeing with these fires is visual, but the flame that has been burning California's soul for decades is nothing new. So again, I think you don't want to get necessarily political, but there has to be accountability. And like most of these situations, some of the realities are so ridiculous. You know, our mayor being in Ghana after she promised not to leave, you know, Gavin Newsom going on, you know, a liberal podcast to raise money for a PAC through the fires. You know, some of this stuff is just so insane, but we've been living with insane for decades. So nothing surprises me. And unfortunately, this reality has played itself out again with these fires that has captured the attention of the world. But there's been equal devastation in ways that are not quite as visible as these images you're seeing on television.
And that's a really good point, is that there's been devastation to the standing of institutions and to the communities in the greater Los Angeles area, Southern California, California as a whole, thanks to the leadership that's in place at the moment. And I agree with you that, I mean, we can talk about the leadership of Karen Bass in Los Angeles and Gavin Newsom in Sacramento. And maybe Gavin Newsom is a little bit more, it's maybe a little bit more fair to focus on him because he's been around there for 6 years and 6 years, I believe. And he's, he survived a recall election. California's had an opportunity to make a choice, and they keep choosing him. But it does go back longer than that. I mean, we were talking about, I forget what the name of the proposition was or the number of the proposition was, but California voters voted for a $7.1 billion bond issue to build reservoirs. And that money was available starting in 2014. And I believe Jerry Brown was governor at that point in time. Yeah. And nothing happened with it. Nothing's happened with it for a decade. Now, 6 years of that is on Gavin Newsom, but not all 10 or 11 years of it is on Gavin Newsom. You've got cuts to the fire department by Karen Bass and this kind of weird obsession with DEI that even liberals now are starting to look at and say, why do we have three lesbians named Kristen at the top of the LA fire department? I mean, is that merit, or was there something else going on there? And that's, you know, it's strange, right? And it seems like the focus has been everywhere except on what should be the priorities in all of these communities, which is, you know, safety and, you know, to some extent, education, safety being, you know, fire department and police department, and first, you know, medical first responders and that sort of thing. And especially when you're talking about the nature or nature in Southern California. It's on the edge of a desert. People sometimes will say LA is a desert. LA is not a desert, but it's on the edge of a desert. And this stuff happens because it's on the edge of a desert. And so you prepare for those sorts of things. So if you're going to be Gavin Newsom, and I know I'm kind of monologuing here just a little bit, but I'm frustrated. I'm not as frustrated as you are or people who actually live there. But I've seen this coming for years and years and years because nobody wants to prioritize what's actually necessary, which is to deal with the fact that you're in a semi-arid region and you have to prepare for things like wildfires when you have forested areas right next to densely populated areas. And we used to do that in California. When I was living there, we used to do it. It wasn't perfect. Didn't mean you didn't have some pretty nasty fires that broke out. But we used to do that. And somewhere along the line, that stopped. And you've lived there for a long time.
Yeah, my whole life. Yeah.
You've lived there your whole life. When did California stop taking care of business? I mean, just stop taking care of business. I mean, do you have a sense of like some sort of inflection point when that happened?
It's been decades. I mean, again, you don't want to get super political, but you can't help but hold people accountable. You know, there is only one party in California. They have a supermajority. And look, you mentioned budgets, and there's a $3 billion fire budget in California, but we have a $35 billion train to nowhere, and which has basically exploded to a $100 billion estimate to finish a train. You have the water, the head of the DWP in Los Angeles, who said her biggest priority coming into office is equity. It's not getting people water, getting people clean water, filling reservoirs. And again, you could go down the list. I think the nature of kind of DEI and wokeism is to have these big global statements that says you're going to fix these world problems. And they love to blame these events on climate change. Chuck Schumer did it the other day, which is really an excuse for doing nothing. If you truly believe that climate change is a critical threat to California and is causing all these weather issues, and certainly climate change may be a part of it. Climate change has always been a part of things. Wouldn't you increase your resources to fight these fires? Wouldn't a sane person say, okay, climate change is going to cause all these fires, so let's get a fleet of water bombers. Let's increase our brush maintenance. Let's increase our budget for firefighters instead of cutting them. Let's rehire the firefighters we fired because they wouldn't get the COVID vaccine. So these simple, sane things you would think all of us would implement. But when you have this mindset of these big kind of DEI woke ideologies, the things that are practical, those are boring to you. You don't want to like think about that. They don't make good speeches. So I think that has come to roost in so many ways in California. I mean, it is so sad. You know, in Reagan's California used to be the height of technology, the height of the arts. It was the shining city on the hill. But this woke mind virus has really consumed the government and frankly, a lot of the voters. Because at the end of the day, people keep reelecting these people. And and I don't know if this will change things. I'm kind of skeptical about that because it really is a cult, a religion. But at the same time, it's still important for us to take care of the folks who need our support, our financial support, our psychological support, our hugs, our love. A lot of Republicans lost houses. A lot of Democrats lost houses.
Absolutely.
That is not political. That is something we need to rally around. And the other big issue folks aren't talking about as much on the news as I think they should is the insurance commissioner. That disaster maybe is equal to the catastrophic loss of property. At my house, after the Woolsey fire, we could not get insurance. And when I say we could not get insurance because it was too expensive, we could not get a quote. Nobody would give us a quote. I'd say, give me any quote, $50,000, $100,000, what? $1 million. It's like, is there anything I could pay to get fire insurance? And they said, no, we're out. And of course, everybody's railing against their insurance companies. But what they don't talk about is Gavin Newsom and his insurance commissioner would not allow insurance companies to raise rates. You're going to have to raise rates. There's been a lot of fires here. There's been a lot of losses. You run a business. And California is not maintaining fire prevention measures. So of course, insurance companies are going to say, sorry, I can't take that risk because I can't afford it. So that is a massive disaster for so many. I have this thing called the California Fair Plan. That's the only thing you can get. But again, it does not cover probably 80% of those houses in the Palisades. And the problem is a lot of people have been railing about, well, they're all rich. They all live in the Palisades. You know what people are talking about? There are families that have been there for generations in those houses. Okay. They're not rich. They're not celebrities. You know, there's no way with the Fair Plan insurance, they can rebuild their houses. So that is the true tragedy of all of this. And California has only expedited that and made a terrible situation one that many people will not be able to recover from.
You know, I want to keep on this idea of insurance. I do want to say, too, I don't care if they're celebrities. They still lost their houses.
Yes.
I don't care if they're rich. They still lost their houses.
Yes.
And that may have some political impact. We can come back around to that because I do want to talk to you about the longer term political impact in Southern California and game that out just a little bit. But the reason why insurance companies were raising rates in California was because California's government was making it much riskier to cover houses. They were at the same time while they're capping prices. And this is, you know, Karen Bass is out, I think today, this morning or late last night, saying that she's laser focused on price gouging.
Yeah.
No, get laser focused on fighting the fires. You know, if people are having to pay, you know, what we call it in Uber terms, it's called surge pricing, right?
Yeah.
It's because there isn't a lot of supply. And I think she was specifically talking about shelter, right? Yeah. And there's a story that people are going to cluck their tongues at a little bit in Radar about, you know, celebrities who are battling for rooms at, you know, Hotel Bel Air and Chateau Marmont and places like that. It's because they're homeless. First off, you know, let's remember they're actually homeless. And they've got resources, and I know that they're going to land on their feet because they have resources. But they're still homeless people. They're displaced. So just writing that off is ridiculous. But you're right, and Palisades is like that. But even more so, Altadena, which is gone apparently.
Yes.
Yes. Altadena, if you live in LA, Altadena's right next to Pasadena. Pasadena's kind of old money.
Yeah.
And even Pasadena is really people who have gotten those houses passed down to them over the years. Not everybody there has a income level that would support them living in that area. And Altadena is much more like that. And so the people who got wiped out in Altadena, they're never going to be able to rebuild there. They're never going to have the money to do it because their insurance company is going to, if they even have insurance, their insurance is going to just crap out. And that's even if the, you know, if California allows them to rebuild, because you and I both know that the permit process is entirely insane in California. It's just this whole thing with government intervention and what should be normal market processes, which is creating disasters that come on top of other disasters. And you're right. People have lost probably everything they had in this fire, and they're never going to get it back because there's no mechanism now for them to get it back, which means that they're going to have to start over from scratch. And some of these people are retirees. Some of these people are in the last years of their working life, and they just simply can't. That's ground they'll never be able to make up. And that's, I think a disaster is going to go forward for years and years and years because of these decisions by the political establishment in California, which sees insurance companies as evil parasites, which is basically how they treated them in California, which is the reason why insurance companies don't want to operate there any longer.
Well, they see businesses as evil parasites. They see employers as evil. Literally, they are kind of a Marxist ideology government. And they govern that way, and people keep voting for them. I still have two houses up the street from the Woolsey fire 6 years ago, two empty lots that people have not been able to rebuild yet. It is going to be heartbreaking for so many of these families who will never be able to rebuild their houses and have their lives back. And certainly if California has anything to say about that, I don't know if the federal government's going to step in. I don't know what's going to happen there. But it's so tragic. And again, we've said this before, you're not going to stop every fire, especially this one. But, you know, people have been talking about the hurricanes in Florida with DeSantis. He always has the resources ready to go. And you do the best you can. And maybe instead of, you know, losing 1,000 houses, you lose 100. We'll never know. But we do know the incompetence is criminal. It's criminal negligence, and there has to be accountability. But in the meantime, we got this week to get through. We may have a few more weeks to get through. We may have many more fires. And I think that's our focus now. I think we'll deal with those who I think are partially responsible for this later. But it's certainly infuriating when you see friends, you talk to them on the phone who've lost their houses and they're in tears. And in the back of your mind, you're wondering, did this have to happen?
Did it have to happen? And did it have to happen in a way that left them without any sort of safety net, right? Hopefully the people that, most of the people who lost their houses were grandfathered in on their insurance plans, but that's not going to be true of everybody. And now you're going to have a crisis in housing that's even worse than the crisis in housing that existed in Los Angeles before these fires.
I have friends who their insurance was canceled 3 months ago because they wouldn't allow State Farm to increase rates, our insurance commissioner. Can you imagine that? You've lived somewhere, you have a house for 70, 80 years, your insurance gets canceled, and 3 months later, it's literally ashes. So I think a lot of people are still in shock, and that'll go on for a long time. I remember, you know, we were watching the news and we saw, you know, we thought our house burned down. We literally saw our street and two fires. and we got very fortunate because typically the fire department stages in our neighbor's house, but he had his gates locked. So they decided to stage in our house. And that's the difference between our house burning down and not. And he lost his house. Sometimes it's as simple as that, you know. So yeah. I've been kind of trying to educate people about simple things about, you know, if you have gates, leave them open, leave your keys in your cars, take all the backyard furniture and close your, you know, all this simple stuff that may be the difference of your house surviving or not. But But yeah, it's again, it's tragic, it's infuriating, and let's hope the worst is over. Let's hope the worst is over.
Let's hope the worst is over. Let's hope that the winds die down and they can contain these things, and also that they can crack down on the nutcases that are actually setting fires in this environment. Yeah. Beyond this, though, and we've talked about this, we kind of nibbled at the edge of this. This is a long-time problem in California, and you're right about the progressive woke mind virus. It's been there for a long time. It was taking hold when I left in 97. It was all not even taking hold. It was there. That's not why I left, by the way. I left because I needed to find a job, and I got offered one in Minnesota, and we took it. But it is why I've told my family and friends I'm never moving back. You know, I'll come out and visit, but I'm never moving back because it's insane. And it's unfortunate because it used to be great, and it could be great. There's still aspects of it that are great, but they are not being served by the government that's supposed to serve them because the government screwed up. And you're right. It's accountable to the voters. The voters have to take some responsibility for electing radical activists like Karen Bass instead of people who know what they're doing in terms of governance. Do you think that that's a lesson that's going to stick? Because I talk to people, I've talked to, you know, some family and friends who live out there, and they're kind of split on this. A couple of them say, oh yeah, no. Those days are over, man. You know, they're going to run this group out of town on a rail, and they're going to bring in people who know what they're doing. And the other half are going, never happen. Yeah. Never happen. They're going to set up a couple of scapegoats, and that's it. It's going to be business as usual. What's your read on that?
Probably somewhere in the middle. I don't think Karen Bass survives. I think she will be recalled. You know, we in the election here for mayor, her opponent was Rick Caruso. Yep. It was very close race. Actually, he was ahead at the end of the first day, and absentee ballots put her over the top. You know, the symbolism and irony couldn't be better that, you know, his mall survived when the rest of the Palisades burned down because he had his own private fire crew. So I don't see how she survives. Newsom's terming out. So I think, you know, there's certainly momentum to recall him, but I don't think that'll go anywhere because he's terming out anyways. I think the most interesting time will be the election for our next governor. And if the Republicans can put up a candidate that is progressive enough on social issues, but strong on kind of crime, fiscal issues, and obviously environmental wildfire protection, stuff like that. So I don't know. Again, we've been so far gone, so far long. And again, this is localized to Los Angeles and everybody cares, but you know, the rest of Northern California, they haven't lost their homes, and they kind of still feel, you know, it's all about social justice, and it's about these terms that sound good, and you want to be on that side. You know, Trump being president's not going to help because everybody will, you know, find ways to rationalize that this is Trump's fault for some reason. But I don't know. Look, I would have been gone, you know, 2 decades ago, but we have a family business here. My parents are in their 80s, and I need to be here. And but all my friends have left. Look, we lost a congressional seat because everybody's, you know, getting out of California. I think many of these folks who've lost homes will not come back. I think a lot of them have been thinking about getting out anyways. Why build a home here if you're disgusted with the state anyways? So I think a significant percentage of these folks will just leave. And many other people are thinking about just leaving too. But you know, we are seeing a national and almost worldwide transition to sanity with governments. We're seeing it in Canada. We saw the election here. And maybe there is some kind of trend to have competent government. You see the LA Times actually making statements about we need competent people, not ideologues. You see the Washington Post making some changes, you know, things you never thought would happen. So I wouldn't say I'm optimistic, but I'm not overly pessimistic. And we'll see, you know, I think Bass will be recalled or she'll be forced to resign. But again, the problem goes way beyond her. But we'll see. Certainly, it's a wake-up call, I think, to many folks, particularly liberals, who have lost their homes and were promised, you know, who pay exorbitant taxes so their fire hydrants work. And you see a lot of liberal actors and people coming out saying common sense things, which you haven't seen. It's not just me, Patty Heaton, you know, the Kevin Sorbo, you know, the usual suspects who get shunned. You know, it's people who voted for Kamala Harris, who voted for Karen Bass, who voted for Gavin Newsom. So, you know, when you lose your home and you see your neighbors lose their homes, it's not about, you know, global warming, you know, DEI, you know, equity anymore. It's about real life things and real life people.
You know, and we're going to wrap up here in a minute because I don't want to keep you too long because you've got a lot of things that you need to do. But I'm curious about the entertainment industry and how they're going to react to this, because it wasn't just celebrities that lived in the Palisades or, you know, in some of these other areas that were pretty hard hit, but also sort of the movers and shakers, the big finance people, yeah, those sorts of people in the entertainment industry. And you've just made the point that some of these people are coming out and saying this is ridiculous. And I'm wondering, I mean, let's face it, LA is an entertainment industry town. The entertainment industry dominates it, politically, culturally, pretty much in every way. It's a town built for them. And I'm wondering whether or not this is going to provide an inflection point for that industry, or and this is me being really pessimistic, John, and I don't mean to be too terribly pessimistic in the moment, or if they see it as an opportunity to completely restructure Los Angeles in, you know, the whole progressive, you know, LA 2.0 vision that's kind of being bandied about right now. David wrote about it earlier today. And I don't know. I would hope it's the former. I'm a little worried that it might be the latter.
Well, we'll see if she is recalled. And I think Rick Caruso has a very good chance of being elected mayor. And if that happens, you will see a significant change. You know, I do have to look at, you know, is maybe a template is what's happened with not just California Jews, but Jews around the nation. You know,
right.
I've been working a lot with Israel the last year and a half since October 7th. And many, probably most California Jewish people, especially in LA, are very liberal. And
right.
They had this awakening of, oh my God, I've supported Black Lives Matter. I marched with Martin Luther King. I've done all these things. And now we've basically been attacked and raped and beheaded. And nobody's supporting us. Where is everybody? You know, the Tony Blinken is saying, you know, if Israel doesn't change their ways, they're going to be indistinguishable from Hamas. And so there's been an awakening within the Jewish community here who are overwhelmingly liberal and very liberal. Believe it or not, Beverly Hills, more people voted for Trump than Kamala Harris. So if you're looking for data that shows that people can be moved by extreme events, look no further than the Jewish population, not just in California, but in New York, all around California, who moved significantly to the right. So are you going to get a bunch of MAGA, you know, celebrities and Hollywood agents? No. Are you going to get some people who may vote for Rick Caruso for mayor and may consider maybe not a Republican, but maybe a Democrat who's a little more sane when the governor race comes up? I think you will. I think you will. Again, the next 6 months, I think will be critical, because certainly Gavin Newsom and everybody else will try to blame it on global warming and climate change and go back to the same old rhetoric, you know, Trump's evil, you know, that stuff. But we'll see. I'll keep you in the loop. I'll be talking to more folks, and certainly there's a lot of people, I think, standing up, not just for Republicans or anything, but for sane, rational government that have never spoken up before. And I think that's a healthy thing. And we'll see. There will be people try to quash it. They're already trying to do it. So it's really the fight for the soul of California, like we saw the fight for the soul of the nation, like we're seeing the fight for the soul of the world in Israel. So I think it's important for everybody, no matter how small you think your voice is, It's not to stand up for all these things. They're all kind of the same. They're all kind of for, you know, for common sense, good versus evil, all this stuff. And I think as long as good people stand up and don't kind of cower to the mob, we may be okay.
Well, John Andrasik, normally I'd ask you what's going on with Fight for Fighting and where you're going to go next, but I know your focus is elsewhere. So I would just make sure that people go over to fightforfighting.com. John's going to have updates over there. He's probably going to have some pointers at where you what you can do to help. Fightforfighting.com, the website's behind me, actually over there. And it's a great website. Make sure you go over there. And John Andrasik, my friend, thank you so much for spending some time. It's a tough, tough time, tough, tough questions. I'm so glad that you're doing well so far. And just stay safe, my friend, okay?
Thank you, Ed. Always a pleasure.